A guy who came in to see me, and I hadn't talked to him, and I didn't know from where he came, but he came in, sat down, he said, "I hope I don't have to come back here with a shotgun like I did with that priest I saw for counseling." And I thought, too late to refer.
Okay, while we may not have had clients who shared quite that strong an opinion with us, we've all been in tough situations. Bill's session turned out okay, by the way. No shotguns were needed. But the thing is, when an angry client is sitting only a few feet away from you and their hostility suddenly turns in your direction, it can be very unsettling. I've been there, and I know many of you have as well. It's not fun at all. But when a client's anger turns against us, Dr. Zindel Siegel suggests another approach. He reveals one window of opportunity that you can use to calm the client down.
So I think the first place that you need to be able to attend to is to notice what are the effects in your body. And you might notice that there is an arousal. You might notice that there are certain things happening in your body, like the hair on the back of your head stands up, or your heart might start to beat. You might start to wonder if this is being directed at you, if there's a danger of escalation. And then find a way of, inside of all of those sensations, grounding yourself. Being able to see if you can still harness what you can with respect to thinking and planning and staying with the anger and naming it for the client, and then seeing whether there's enough of a tether between the client's expression of the anger and their ability to step back and understand that that's what they're doing. So that there can be a therapeutic conversation around, this event, this phenomenon, rather than just a kind of unrelenting catharsis of someone yelling at you or two people fighting. But can they get a sort of observer stance on the fact that there's a lot of anger in what you're saying, or you seem very angry right now, or can they acknowledge something like that, and then maybe use that as a platform to step to the next level of inquiry around that? Do you feel that anywhere in your body? Or are there ways of looking at some of the thinking that's going on for you right now as these emotions are coming up? Or let's just delve into where in your body this anger is expressing itself. Like, even if clients are allowing you to do that at that moment, there is a way in which the anger itself, it isn't fully capturing the mind. There may be a small sliver of capacity for observing and for stepping back from it. And often, I think the therapeutic inquiry, especially if there's a level of non-reactivity on the part of the therapist, can involve exploring those emotions as being present and then asking other questions that might be a little bit surprising to the client, like, well, what happens if we just stay with the anger and let it be there, and create a space to hold it? Does it stay the same? Does it continue? Or are there other emotions that show up? Or are there other thoughts that show up? So that people get a sense of things changing and moving, and potentially discovering that some of these emotions might be linked to other emotions that come into the mind, and that you're allowing these things to unfold without necessarily telling the person that you've got to shut this down, or we can't work this way, or you're being unfair, or any other ways in which we might need to protect ourselves if we're kind of caught in this maelstrom.
As Zindel said, as long as the client remains responsive to the therapeutic inquiry, you have an in. Their anger hasn't completely taken them offline, but what happens when it does? In other words, how do we take on the energy of a client's anger when it's coming at us full steam? Here, Linda Graham offers a practical strategy to help us stay centered when we start to feel afraid.
So if I feel the energy coming at me, or if I feel the fear coming up, then I will create, I hope, a compassionate barrier between me and that hostility. I still try to stay connected to the client. I try to stay connected to them as a person, a whole person, not just the hostility. But I will sometimes have a a barrier that feels like it protects me from taking on the emotional contagion. There's a phrase that I like from Phil Moffitt, who's a teacher at Spirit Rock Meditation Center. And he says it's important that we can be affected without being infected. So I want to pay attention to the client's experience and be engaged in responding with it, but not being infected with it by myself so that I lose my own ground.
How did you learn to do that?
I'll see if I can do this on the camera. There's a gesture in sensory motor psychotherapy of this, of being open and receptive and yet having a boundary at the same time. And that can go back and forth. I can move my receptivity toward the client. I can move the boundary toward the client. Now, I'm doing that in my own inner subjective experience, but it's useful for me to pay attention to when I need more of a barrier or when things have moved in a different direction and I can open up to the receptivity again. So I'm working with that as my own internal state as I'm navigating whatever the client is sending toward me.
As Linda shared, it's important to always be in touch with your internal state. Now, Dr. Sue Johnson had another take on this. While it's important to have that boundary, Sue shares what can go wrong if we get too far away and lose that emotional connection.
If the client gets angry at me, the first thing I have to do is breathe and keep my balance and not take it personally. And I will, you know, in EFT, the therapist has to be emotionally present. So if it is difficult for me, I will say something. Like I'll say, oh, Danny, I'm so sorry. I'm hearing that you're angry at me right now. And I'm hearing that and that's kind of hard for me to hear because I'm really trying to understand you. But I'm hearing that from your point of view, this is empathic reflection, right? I'm hearing that from your point of view, I just don't understand how difficult it is for you when your wife doesn't want to make love to you twice a day. And for you, you're feeling like I'm a woman and I'm just not understanding that. And I'm just somehow dismissing you and telling you that that's a ridiculous request. Is that what you're hearing? So I try to hear him and he calms down and he says, yes, that's right. And what's really interesting is, I feel like I am understanding him. He says he's got high testosterone. What I'm understanding is he's massively anxiously attached. And it's not that he needs orgasms every day. What he needs is that he only feels safe when he's actually making love to her. And it's that emotional connection and safety that he only knows how to create in bed that he's obsessed with. But I'm not going to go, that's way beyond. That's like 8 sessions, 10 sessions down the road. Right now, my job is to create safety in the session by staying emotionally engaged with him and saying, you're angry at me, okay, and still being emotionally present. You know, if I flip out and go into giving long explanations or justifying myself or somehow blaming the client, that breaks the alliance. My main job is to create safety and engagement in the session with me. So if I'm losing my balance regularly with a client in EFT, we teach that you have to go and find a colleague to talk to and help get that colleague to help you find that emotional balance. If you're not emotionally present, you're not going to be able to work with people's emotions, which is, from our point of view, the main way of creating change. Emotion's so powerful. If you could get emotion online, there is just nothing that creates change and change that lasts like a new corrective emotional experience. And we don't even have to look at research for that. There is research on it, but we know that in our bones. We know that in our bones as therapists.
Sue stressed the importance of staying attached to make yourself emotionally available for the work. Now look, we know that it can be challenging, especially when a patient is pretty agitated. Some clients just aren't able to come down from these high states. Dr. Stan Tatkin offers some insight on how to work with those kind of clients.
A lot of therapists have trouble working with angry, hostile patients, but not everybody. Some people are fine with that, people who tend to psychobiologically, we think of as fighters, where they enjoy working with angry, hostile people. But people who tend to flee or faint really don't like it. It really causes a lot of upheaval in their nervous system. And so one of the first things I think is whether the therapist can regulate him or herself in the presence of not just even one angry or hostile person, but if you're doing couple therapy or family therapy, several people or group therapy. And so this, a big part of this I just want to start with is an ongoing task for the clinician to be able to self-regulate through a variety of states. Now, anger tends to be a very highly sympathetic experience, right? Mostly it's hyper-aroused, and it gets into the fight-or-flight system, which is a hypothalamically driven state. The brain actually changes when we get into this place. Now, our patients are allowed to become hyper-aroused, maybe even sometimes stimulated to be, or hypo-aroused. That's fine. But the therapist can't afford to do that. Now, Dan Siegel, has his window of tolerance. I think it's a great idea to visualize or imagine what is your optimal range of functioning. And how do you know when you've gone above that optimal range into hyperarousal or you've gone below into hypoarousal? Very important, because if you go above or below the line, so to speak, and this is all depends on your ability to manage. That is, whether you're feeling sick or not, depressed or tired, not eating well, no exercise, all this affects window of tolerance. You need to be in that center because you need to be able to think. Somebody in the room has to be able to do that, and that's you. So one of the challenges of working with loud people who are yelling and who are angry or threatening is that the therapist can go out of window of tolerance, and now everyone's in the room is in trouble. So this is really, really important to find a way to learn how to regulate these states. If you know that this person is not going to do anything like throw something or pick up a chair and hit you or hit their partner, I would suggest letting it happen for a while and watching and waiting and wondering what they're going to do next. These people we call high arousal people eventually run out of gas. And they do, when they run out of gas, that's when you can start working with lower states, because they're exhausted and they're open to it. If you try to interrupt them, good luck. But you can try to play along with them. And this, again, has to do with your comfort level. You can be agitated and with them, so you're not at them, but you're going along with them at the same speed and the same intensity while staying in a window of tolerance. And this many times is experienced as, believe it or not, friendly to the angry person. Because you're not mocking them, you're not challenging them, you're not going up against them, you're going with them. And then you can start to bring them down, you can start to calm them down if they're really agitated, much like, you know, putting your car in front of a runaway car and slowly braking instead of just trying to stop that person. Again, highly accelerated people do not like to be stopped. They experience a lot of pain when you try to stop them right away. And so be careful with that. I think that dealing, again, with angry, hostile people is a challenge for the therapist. If it's coming toward you and you're the target, very important to stay regulated. What happens, what I do, is the louder somebody gets, the more I relax my body. The more intense they get, the more I relax my body. The more dangerous words they use, I relax my body. And this is a way to keep my blood pressure lower so that I don't act out my countertransference. Or somebody else might act out their countertransference by freezing or by leaving the room. So very, very challenging.
When I used to work in a community mental health center, I would have people that come in that be forced into treatment. We call them involuntary clients, right? Court-ordered. Sometimes ordered by their work, but usually it was court order. It was a legal thing because I got in trouble in some way and the judge said, or the probation officer said, go to that, you know, place, or we're going to put you in jail. So they had a lot of leverage with those people. Those folks would often come in just, you know, like not happy people, angry at me, who hadn't done anything, and angry at the world. And you know, I sort of learned this from Erickson, but it was true for me. Erickson said to just match him. You know, you got to join them wherever they are. And so I would say, you know, it pisses me off that I have to see you. And they'd be a little surprised. I go, you know, my boss says I have to see people who don't want to be here because it's part of my job description. But I hate it. I really like to work with people who want to change, who are suffering and want to change and have something they want to change. And then they send me you, who basically I know doesn't want to be here. I don't want to be here. Neither of us want to be here. So we got to be here or you're going to go to jail. So while we're here, anything you want to work on? And if it's related to what they've sent you here for, even better, because I'm going to have to write a letter at the end saying you did some work on that issue they want you to do some work on, or else they're going to put you in jail. And that just diminished that level of initial hostility because we're in it together. Before, it's us versus them. It's me versus them. I don't want it to be like that. So joining, I think, is a good method for doing that.
In the next video, we'll look at practical ways to work with a client's anger when it turns passive-aggressive. I'll see you there.